Welcome to Engineering Influence, a podcast from the American Council of Engineering Companies. We have today another focus on our private markets team, and we are looking at the newest private industry brief on a new market segment, K-12 and higher education. And to do that, we have on the program Aaron McLaughlin, of course, who you are well acquainted with, our monthly YouTube videos. We're making her a YouTube star. And Diana Alexander. And they are actually right now gearing up to head out of D.C. right after Thanksgiving for the first ever private market symposium on intermodal and logistics taking place in Charleston, South Carolina on December 2nd and 3rd. So they're packing up while they're getting ready. Aaron, Diana, welcome to the program. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you for having us.
So how's the planning coming for the symposium so far?
Well, the planning for the symposium is coming together very well. We are excited that the infrastructure bill has been signed into law. And so, you know, and there's so much attention right now on the ports and the supply chain and freight infrastructure and industrial real estate. And those are all of the things that we're going to be talking about and how the design and construction community can support this market in December 3rd in Charleston. So anyone listening, it's a great time to come to Charleston. We've got a couple rooms left. Registration is still open. So definitely visit acec.org and you will see, you know, we are welcoming everybody to come and join us because it's so timely and it's going to be very, very interesting. And of course, we're also going to be visiting the Port of Charleston, which is very interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it's a perfect time to go down. Come down on Thursday and watch the Christmas tree get lit.
When we booked our hotel, we didn't know that the City of Charleston holiday tree lighting was across the street in Marion Square. So another festive touch for the weekend. Yeah.
Yeah. But just given the amount of port activity at Charleston and the inland port, the different terminals, it's really, truly amazing exactly what the economic impact is of that work. So great event. And like Aaron, like you mentioned, it's registration is open. We still have some hotel rooms left. Go to acec.org, go to go to business resources on the top of the page, and then private markets resources, and you'll see the symposiums. And we also have a big banner image in the top of the homepage as well to take you there. So check it out. But let's focus in on this new brief, because the education space is new for us to cover. So how did that come about, deciding to kind of focus in on education?
Well, as many folks have heard me say before, when I joined ACEC after my 20-year career with member firms, I was asked to concentrate on the private markets. And so, you know, I set up my agenda and divided up the markets into various categories. And I did not create education as a category because it is not mostly a private market. It's actually mostly a public market. However, it is the largest vertical market in the design and construction space. And so we have not been, you know, it hasn't really fit into anything anyone at ACEC was analyzing. And it is a market where only about 10% of the funding comes, you know, via a federal agency. So it doesn't require a lot of attention from ACEC National on the advocacy front. So, but it is such a huge market. It is the largest vertical market in the US. So it's larger than office and it's larger than commercial. And when you think about all of the different, you know, small and medium-sized cities and towns in the US and how many K-12 schools there are and how many universities and you know, small, medium, and large campuses, I think our members aren't shocked to learn that this is a really big market. So we really, really felt that we needed to analyze it. And when Diana joined our staff earlier this year, it gave us, you know, the flexibility to have her concentrate on that. So this is Diana's first podcast. She's joining us.
Congratulations. Welcome.
Hi, everybody. We're going to go ahead and just sort of talk through what's highlighted in the brief. And of course, the private industry brief is available on acec.org under business resources. And, you know, you can subscribe to receive all of them, or you can, you know, visit the website and just pick and choose the ones you want to read. So, you know, the first market trend or market driver that we analyze, which is a little bit of a no-brainer, is demographics. And, you know, Diana's going to tell us a little bit about how demographics plays into the education market.
Yeah, so Erin's absolutely right. When we started researching this market with K through 12 and higher ed, we really found that demographics drive the market demand in this sector. And we found that between 1985 and 2019, public school enrollment in elementary and secondary schools rose by 28%. And that is pretty significant and worth noting. We also feature a map on the last page of our brief. On this particular example, we call out the fastest growing states in the last 10 years by population and the largest K through 12 school districts by enrollment. And if you look at this, it's also worth noting that the five fastest growing districts are in Florida alone.
Not surprising there. But I am surprised at number four as far as population growth. I didn't expect North Dakota to be there, but I guess that's a responsible oil and gas boom up there.
Yes.
That so many people have moved in. But
right.
It's a great map. Yeah, but I see that cluster down there in the in Florida.
I know. When we think of Florida, we usually think of older people. But it is interesting to note that that Florida does have five of the 10 largest public school districts, and it's also one of the 10 fastest growing states. So if a firm is really into the education market and they're looking to acquire or grow geographically, Florida might be a place to do it.
Right, absolutely. And we also saw in a recent publication by Dell Tech, bids and RFPs rose to about 54,000, which is about a 4% annual growth rate. So pretty solid there.
Yeah, a lot of business opportunity there.
So what's really interesting about the education market, I sort of referred to it before, it's not a market that's funded at the national or federal level. It's a market that's funded, you know, K through 12 wise. Public education is funded largely through state and local taxes, property taxes in most states, but augmented by other kinds of taxes, lottery sales in other ways. But one of the trends that we call out that is more specific to higher education is sort of the continued evolution of P3 as a project type. So what's been really interesting in this market is that P3 concessionaires, who often are our primes, or the contractor is our prime, because usually these are done under sort of alternative delivery, design build, large team ways. But it really started out, you know, probably more than a dozen years ago, focused on housing, because housing at the university level is a revenue generating asset. And so P3s would go in, concessionaires, they would sort of take over the dorms and create housing, which so many campuses needed. But the trend that we've really seen is that it's going beyond sort of the obvious revenue generating assets, and it's going into different kinds of project types. So we're really seeing P3s expand and include everything from, you know, science facilities and student unions to central utility plants, energy infrastructure and parking facilities, and just everything that when you think of a campus, a higher ed campus, that would be included in that. And then the other trend that we call out in the brief is, you know, 2020 was obviously a really uncertain year for a lot of higher education institutions because students couldn't return to campus in large part because of the pandemic and because of the spread. And so funding was at question. You know, a lot of students did not enrollment declined slightly. You couldn't get those international students who generally, you know, pay their full bill in. And so Diana's going to tell us a little bit about sort of a strange record that universities seem to set in 2020.
Yeah, so just like Aaron, myself, we both had former lives working for engineering firms. And one of the things we always did was follow the money. And so where were the bonds going? So she's right. In 2020, it was reported that colleges and universities issued a record number of bonds. And because this was during an uncertain time during, you know, because of COVID and international students not being able to come over, she's absolutely right. This was a chance for universities to shore up their funding.
When we, as a former business development director, one thing that I would often do is track the bonds at the county level, especially for really large school districts. And I know that, you know, for many of our member firms that hold IDIQ or other multi-year contracts with universities or with K through 12 school districts, that's a really important business development tactic. So it's just become increasingly important as we see the number of bonds expand.
As a voter in Fairfax County, Virginia, I can tell you that is, without question, something I always pay attention to, because it seems like every election there's a bond issue on the ballot. And it's not a small bond issue either. We're talking in the hundreds of millions of dollars as far as investments in schools.
Yes.
And so if you're a firm out there, looking at the county level is definitely something you want to do, especially in these high growth areas.
Yeah, Fairfax County is I'm a new resident of Fairfax County myself. It is a very large county, as we know. It's the largest in the DC metro area, and almost every bond passes all the time. So
yes,
which is
it's a sure bet here.
Yeah. So the others, we're going to discuss, and we sort of discussed it through our brief, you know, sort of the follow the money, you know, aspect of understanding this client type. And one of the other trends that we call out, which is really interesting, is that universities, you know, higher education institutions that are very tied to healthcare and providing healthcare through, you know, maybe they're connected to a healthcare system via a hospital, or they have a very robust research and life sciences division. You know, those are really interesting universities to possibly target and to pay closer attention to because they have a lot more money. In fact, S&P Global noted that universities with medical schools and research institutions often derive between 40% and 70% of their total revenue from that part of their campus. So that is just really eye-opening. And, you know, it's just very interesting to think about that.
Yeah, I was just going to say the fact that you guys are doing a symposium next year on science, health, you know, the science and technology, right. Especially in Boston, where you're going to be holding that, is a perfect example of the investments that have been made in life sciences, biotechnology, and the like by universities, especially universities up in Boston. I mean, you have Harvard, you have MIT. Real heavy hitters. But universities everywhere seem to be expanding their programs and their research into these technical fields that require a lot more infrastructure than your traditional fields of study.
That's right. And, you know, they're getting funding from all different types of sources. And in the brief, we call out that universities can receive quite a bit of funding from NIH. And we lay out in the brief the top 10 universities in the country, with Johns Hopkins University receiving $807 million in funding just for the fiscal year of 2020.
Yeah. Not a shock that Johns Hopkins leads, as they often do, but some of the others on the list are occasionally a surprise. And so it's interesting to think about that. And sort of in connection, Jeff teased out we have several other private market symposiums coming up in 2022. As Jeff said, one of them is going to be in Boston. It's actually going to be in Cambridge. And we are focusing on health and life sciences, but certainly we'll be discussing university development. And one of the trends related to that, we call out in the brief that in our business development insight, which is specific to innovation districts. So all over the country, we've seen a lot of universities, especially more urban universities or universities in suburban areas that are more densely developed that don't have a lot of, you know, land opportunities, creating these sort of adjacent campuses in partnership often with, you know, a Fortune 500 type science, technology, healthcare, or bio life science related company to leverage, you know, both the knowledge and the research and the real estate. And often these become sort of mini cities. You know, we have one right here in outside of Washington. The Amazon headquarters is coming to Virginia Tech's Northern Virginia sort of innovation district is what they're called. They all brand themselves and use different, you know, fun names, but they're all over. They're certainly in Cambridge, Mass. They're in Philadelphia. They're everywhere up and down the East Coast and all the way over, including the West Coast as well. So what's really interesting about this is that it is a development play. And so there's a lot of opportunity for our member firms to sort of track these and try to get on teams to provide design services. But it's also an interesting funding play.
Yeah, Erin, you know, I find that just amazing, especially being so close here to Amazon and watching that unfold. You know, can you help us understand how these innovation districts fund universities and campus and research? Can you tell us more about that?
Yeah, so it's actually connected, which I find fascinating, to the patents and licensing deals that result from the research. So besides the fact that the universities and, you know, whether it's Amazon or some other company getting together to do the development of the land and the real estate deal together, they partner in the research, which often creates funding and revenue streams as a result of the patents and licensing. So it's just everything that I've been reading in the last year that we've seen in preparation for this brief and even afterwards, talking about the little blip, you know, because of the pandemic that higher education has had, combined with a lot of public institutions who are under a lot of stress from, you know, state and local governments wanting to tighten up their spending, has resulted in this, you know, new model, which is only expected to grow.
It's really interesting how this is developing. I mean, the ties between private companies and the private sector and education has always kind of been there. But it seems like with the rise of tech, it's just become hand in glove with the number of outside organizations that are investing back in, and the tie-in between the tech sector, especially with institutions back to MIT with their multimedia lab. It seems like they're putting out patents almost on a daily basis. Yeah. And a lot of their people are moving out and starting their own startups. So it seems like it's a mutually beneficial thing to have this relationship between the academic and the private sector side of things.
Right. It's really interesting because a lot of times we think nationally that that kind of activity only happens in Silicon Valley. And what these innovation districts do is sort of take that and spread it all around. And it's not just about technology. It's also, of course, about, you know, healthcare and life sciences. But it's very interesting. And then, of course, our last trend that we outlined in the brief is about sustainability and renewable energy. So, you know, just like states and localities and big, you know, real estate companies and asset managers, universities, often because their students are really putting pressure on them and asking for it, are creating carbon neutral and net zero goals, aggressive goals. And so just like being a little city, these campuses have to find a way to become net zero. And often that is through, you know, the purchase of renewable energy.
And that has become so popular. I mean, you can't go anywhere without hearing those buzzwords of resiliency and sustainability. And, it, you know, the education market is just coming right along with it. And I definitely think COVID has advanced that. And we do note in the brief that in 2015, the National Renewable Energy Laboratory, they reported that only 60 universities had signed up for these PPAs, which are these power purchase agreements. And now that number is over 200 as these universities really turn to solar to power their facilities.
Right. And so a lot of universities, obviously, if you're in a very rural place, a land grant university, you might have the land to develop solar. And solar still takes up a lot of land, you know, but or rooftops or whatever. It takes up a lot of space. But these PPAs, which have, you know, almost tripled in popularity in the last 6 years, are about universities purchasing, you know, solar power that can be generated offsite. And of course, there's different technological advances that have happened as a result of transmission and battery storage, et cetera. Check out our energy and utilities brief we published in September if you want to read more about that stuff. But that is just another thread that we see in all parts of the built environment, and we certainly see here on higher education campuses.
Well, I no shortage of information and examples and things, you know, happening in the market. I mean, it makes sense. If anybody questioned, like, why education? Well, here you go. I think you guys just detailed a significant number of examples here where the our members can take advantage of these markets. And you know, it's a great addition to the private industry briefs, which again, I mean, this is a great subscribe to these briefs because it's the only place you're going to find tailored market data that really focuses in on a number of markets of interest. I mean, again, we're looking at the commercial real estate and residential real estate. We're looking at science and technology, education, of course, healthcare. We're looking at intermodal and logistics. I mean, this is good updated market data where you can kind of help this with your business planning. And then, of course, your monthly updates of the economic updates in 10 minutes or less. I mean, that's another great option. So a lot of good stuff coming out from your department. I want to congratulate you both on what you're doing.
Thank you. It's a very interesting time to be analyzing, you know, market forces of the built environment. I'm very glad that Diana has signed up to be with us on this ride. And we're very excited to keep doing it.
Happy to be here.
Yeah, and we're very happy to have you on board. We are going to make sure to link this new brief to the show notes on the episode page, of course. And again, you can find it on www.acec.org. Business resources, go over the private markets, and you'll see it in the list of offerings that Diana and Aaron offer our member firms. So thank you for coming on. Good luck in Charleston. Have a good time. And I know that's going to be a spectacular event. And this has been Engineering Influence, a podcast from the American Council of Engineering Companies. We will see you next time.